I'm Alex Barlow, editor-in-chief of Breitbart News, and this is the Breitbart News Daily Podcast. The left has again managed to change the narrative from the Biden inflation, their coronavirus failures, the divided country, the open borders, violence against police, supply chain issues, et cetera, with a leak that liberal justice Stephen Breyer will be retiring from the Supreme Court bench. The timing is pretty perfect for Big Joey. Perhaps too perfect. Was Breyer pushed out? Well, certainly looks that way. And there's probably enough time for him to nominate someone qualified and get them confirmed before a midterm election. But there's always a lot of mystery and hopes that a left-wing pick could get blocked given the current makeup of the Supreme Court. And who's to say a vice president can even break such a tie? I don't know if that's actually been established. All this comes up towards the beginning of the show. And Big Joey has not made matters easy on himself by already committing to selecting specifically a woman of color. Only a woman, only a person of color for that post. If this sounds a little racist or sexist to you, it's because it is. So I break that down as well as with our first guest, Ken Klukowski, who is a fan favorite and a legal contributor for us at Breitbart News. He joins the show to explain what's going on and what happens next. Also in the opening of the show, I touch on the Fed's plan to raise interest rates. It's coming sooner than we thought. Obviously a sign there are deep concerns about the Biden inflation and the latest on the Ukraine-Russia conflict, or is it a fake conflict? Hard to say at this point. One could go either direction, and we give you the details. In the opening, there's a hoaxy China bill that's being floated by Democrats. I comment on that, as well as give a couple more scoops from Peter Schweitzer's book, Red Handed, which is out now. And those of you who missed yesterday's show, not only did I break down my bout with the coronavirus, the birth of my new daughter, but also we had a long interview with Peter Schweitzer on his book Red Handed, which is incredible stuff. We have a second guest today, Alan Bakari, who's our top tech reporter at Breitbart News. We spent the first half of the discussion talking about the partnership of the far left fact checkers at NewsGuard, a supervillain of my book Breaking the News, and a major teachers union. Yikes, this is not a partnership that will benefit the country by any means, and we explain to you why. Then we get into Silicon Valley's ever-increasing efforts to censor pretty much everyone who isn't insufficiently woke. All that to come on a pretty big show today. But first, before we get into it, I do want to talk about American Heart for Gold. I'm not the only one who's noticed that everything is getting expensive. We're in the biggest economic crisis since 2008, and the government keeps printing trillions and trillions of dollars. Consumer prices are the highest we've seen in 30 years, and inflation is here to stay. If the government continues its out-of-control printing and spending, the dollar could continue its freefall and lose its coveted role as the world reserve currency. So, how do you protect your money, your retirement, your savings? Well, American Hartford Gold can show you how to hedge your hard-earned savings against inflation by helping you diversify a portion of your portfolio into physical gold and silver. And they'll even help you move your existing IRA or 401k out of the volatile stock market and into a precious metals IRA. And they make it easy. They're the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ from the Better Business Bureau, and they have thousands of satisfied clients. And if you call them right now, they'll give you up to $1,500 of free silver on your first qualifying order. So don't wait. Call them now. Call 866-670-7660. That's 866-670-7660, or text Alex to 65532. Again, that's 866-670-7660 or text Alex to 65532. I do want to plug my interview with Peter Schweitzer that we did a full hour on the live show. So, you know, 40, 42 minutes or whatever it is on the podcast that you can get if you, wherever you get your podcasts, where we talk about his book Red Handed, which is a truly terrific work. And I'm really heartened because I have got some inside scoops on what the numbers are like in terms of sales so far, and they're very, very high. And that's great news because Peter is not just a friend and a colleague at Breitbart, but he's also someone who is a no BS guy. He is trying to reveal hard truths about the way our elite interact with China. And we had him on the show for an entire hour yesterday. It is truly can't miss, and probably the longest interview he'll do unless as I noted, I go out and see him, and we do one of our long form video interviews, which I think we're going to do. I'm almost positive we are. But it is great, and I do recommend it. And you can see some of the details, like how Senator Dianne Feinstein's husband has a company that is partly owned, that they have, that sold spyware to the U.S. military. So literally, she was the most important person in the country, arguably, on intelligence and running the Senate Intelligence Committee. And her husband, they cut deal after deal with China. And we know that she had that China spy as her quote-unquote driver, who was more than her driver. But it was also that he was selling spyware to the U.S. military. And this has been deemed acceptable. And we've all kind of swept it under the rug for whatever reason that comes up. Nancy Pelosi having shifting her China stance, who she used to actually talk a tough game on China, unlike Dianne Feinstein, who always kissed China's butt. But Pelosi used to talk a tough game until all of a sudden she stopped. And she stopped at the time that her family, not just her husband, but her son, started to score big deals with Beijing. And this is not just in the political class. This is the lobbying class. This is the education class. And we start touching on these revelations in the interview yesterday, and it is something that I do recommend to all of you. It's gotten a lot of praise. Mark Levin calling it bulletproof. It's a great way of putting it. And we're seeing big reactions from people in Congress, and I think there's going to be a lot more. And it could wake people up as we head in towards the genocide games, which are coming up. And I think that this is the opportunity. This is the opportunity to get everyone on board that we need to crack down on Wall Street's connections, big tech's connections, and of course the political elite's connections to China, and we need to do it now, and this book needs to be the catalyst. So all that on the show yesterday and on the podcast, and I do think it's a good place to start, because I have this story about how the Republican Study Committee has said that the Democrats have a quote-unquote anti-China bill, but it's got a bunch of woke climate change carve-outs. And one thing Peter does quite nicely in his bill, in his book, is he makes it clear that the United States, the Biden family in particular, has continued to allow China to skate on the exact things the United States could never get away with. Like, China is allowed to continue to pollute more, to emit more for the next decade or so before they're ostensibly or allegedly supposed to start cutting their emissions. So even though you all are harassed constantly for, you know, your climate sins, for your littering and your straws and your not enough solar panels, and you're actually having fossil fuels and wanting pipelines and wanting coal and wanting, you know, the state of West Virginia to exist, all of these things are problematic, quote unquote problematic, in the United States. But in the meantime, the Democrats continue to allow for China, Biden in particular, to pollute and emit more and more, and that is going to continue to ramp up until eventually they'll cut another deal, and then it will ramp up some more, because they don't care. They don't care at all. So, this is a very important thing that we're seeing. China wants to start talking about China. I'm sorry, the Democrats want to start talking about China, but they are also going to shoehorn other stuff they want, like climate change carve-outs and woke stuff. All right, so the biggest story from yesterday, there were two huge ones, but the biggest story is Justice Stephen Breyer is going to retire, and so this will give Joe Biden a chance to fill a vacancy, which, you know, he probably will be able to do. But I do think that, as has been the pattern, I think it's incumbent on Republicans, especially Cocaine Mitch McConnell, to do everything he can to block the appointment. After what we've seen for the last three go-rounds, everything needs to be done to oppose whoever Biden nominates, even if the person is quote-unquote qualified. I mean, there's no one more qualified than the people that Donald Trump put out, and every one of them, Brett Kavanaugh in particular, was smeared, and lies were made miserable in order to get the seat filled. And I highly recommend the favor is returned. And it's something that I know I'm asking for the Soros-funded freaks to try to quote me and say I said something horrible, but I don't care, because that's just the nature of the things we're in, is that we have to fight fire with fire. So every stone needs to be turned over with whoever is nominated, whoever is appointed. And there are a few arguments where you can begin, and the most obvious one is whoever gets nominated is a rapist. It is someone who is a sexual harasser and a rapist, just like Brett Kavanaugh. You know, they made that up out of whole cloth with Kavanaugh. There was a, which I wrote about in excruciating detail in my book, Breaking the News, New York Times bestseller. Highly recommend everyone if you haven't read it. If you're new to the show, it is a better chance to see some of some of my thinking over the last few years. But he was framed as a rapist, and he wasn't one. And it was clear he wasn't one, and they kept calling him a rapist. So I don't know why that exact same thing wouldn't be done to this nominee. And I won't tell you if I'm being tongue-in-cheek or not. I'll leave that up to you. Because this is so, it's all so politicized now, the courts, that why would Republicans make it easy at all for Democrats to fill a seat again after Kavanaugh? And Amy Barrett was nearly as bad. Someone who was a total class act, whether or not you love all of her decisions. I mean, she was treated like she was a some sort of a religious radical. She had seven children. She was a beloved teacher, an educator. She would be everything that you would think would be the exact type of values you would want on your Supreme Court, and yet she was treated nearly as bad as Kavanaugh was. They may have backed that off just the slightest bit after the Kavanaugh hoax backfired. But I don't know what rapist Biden will put up there, but it will be a rapist. Hey, that's what they did to Kavanaugh. If you think it sounds ridiculous, that's literally what we went through for months. So, but in total seriousness, the one tactic that must be used is that Stephen Breyer, the retiring justice, was clearly on the left, and it will give Biden a chance to put a younger leftist on the court, and he will try to do that. And they'll only be, Kristen Sinema and or Kirsten, whichever it is. And I can't get it straight, and I never will. Joe Manchin. There'll be only a couple of votes. John Tester, Mark Warner. There will be a couple. I'm sorry, Kane. A couple others might be convincible. But there is, it will be someone who will be a across the board liberal, but we at a minimum must make sure the person is not a hardcore leftist. That is a minimum. And it will take a lot of research. It'll take a lot of organization, but it is because of the narrow nature of the Supreme Court. Anyone that's a hardcore leftist should be opposed even more vigorously than anyone who's just a standard liberal, because Breyer, the standard is that Breyer himself was more of a liberal. He stood up for judicial independence, and he sided with the left on almost every occasion. But Joel Pollack has a pretty great piece on him that I recommend to all of you on the front page at Breitbart right now, where he goes through some of his decisions where he did buck the politicized side of the leftist judicial establishment, where he did suggest there was a limit to power that you could have in the Supreme Court, and that it was important for people to try to maintain some sort of balance and some sort of adherence to the Constitution. So that stuff must be very clearly, I think, emphasized, because this was part of the Amy Barrett issue, was that people held her to the standard of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or that was the effort that was made. It sounds ridiculous, I know, but that's what it was. That what was done, and I don't see any reason why that tactic shouldn't be continued. So the right's going to have their hands full, and obviously not great news. Carrie Severino from the Judicial Crisis Network, who we have had on the show many times, has said that Stephen Breyer was bullied into retiring by left-wing dark money groups. It seems possible that that could be the case. So she put out a statement saying that she did believe that there he was retiring due to demands put on him by people who are in the institutional left and the money class. Elected Democrats, left-wing groups, etc., because they want to make sure that they can at least shore up that liberal wing of the court. Breyer's getting older, and this is really the only shot Biden was going to have. And considering that the Republicans will likely take the Senate, he didn't have long, probably only another couple of months, to guarantee that a nominee will get a vote. Her basis for that, Was that she cites some of Biden's advisors and some quotes from Jen Psaki, from the White House press secretary, Paige Herwig, who is the White House's point person on judicial nominees. All these people have been pushing hard for Breyer to go. So just a reminder, the institutional left is what's pulling the strings in that side of the aisle. It is not just Joe Biden, and is certainly not some sort of, there's nothing pure going on. The three names that have been thrown around, and I'll talk to Ken Klukowski about this later on the broadcast today, is U.S. Appeals Court of the District of Columbia Judge Kentaji Brown Jackson, who was just recently confirmed 5347, Justice Leandra Kruger of California Supreme Court, and Vice President Kamala Harris. Wouldn't that be great? That would solve Biden's problem. That he doesn't like Kamala, and no one likes Kamala, and she's doing a bad job as vice president. But also the White House has said that it's going to be someone who's currently a judge. So even though it doesn't have to be, the White House has put out that statement. The White House has also said that the pick will be a black woman, which is unbelievable that you would conceivably pass over people who are more qualified because they have the wrong skin tone or gender, which is illegal in the United States, as far as I know. I don't think you can not hire anyone because of their skin tone in this country. I don't think that's true. But yet Biden's announced that, and it's ironic because this is about the Supreme Court. It's one of those things where, shouldn't he just appoint the black female judge? Why does he have to announce, make the proclamation that it has to be? Because saying it must be a black female means it cannot be a white man. It cannot be a Latinx woman. It cannot be a BIPOC non-binary. It has to be a black woman. Hollywood does this stuff too, and there's a lot of talk in entertainment media these days about whether or not there'll be some sort of a eventual class action lawsuit of all these people who are getting losing jobs in writers' rooms and on production staffs because they are not hitting the demographic requirements that are being imposed by Hollywood studios. But for this to happen on our Supreme Court is very embarrassing. So there's been lots of talk for a while that Kamala Harris could be the first black female Supreme Court justice. The White House has kind of splashed cold water on that. Ken Klukowski will give me more later in the show. He'll be on to talk about it. But I think that's kind of where we are. So the other biggest thing that happened yesterday is the Federal Reserve met. And the Federal Reserve meets frequently. We report on it constantly at Breitbart. John Carney joins us to check in on this quite often on the broadcast, and of course Breitbart.com, where we also write, he and I work on together every single day, a newsletter where we discuss the economic news of the day and how it's affecting markets, stuff like that. But the Fed has indicated they're going to be raising interest rates in March in order to combat the Biden inflation, which, remember, for months we were told wasn't happening. Now people are acknowledging it, and the Fed has planned to raise rates. So those of you who are trying to get into a big home loan, now might be the time. Move quick. But it is something that's not totally surprising. But for the meantime, you know, there's a lot of money still being pumped into the economy because the economy is still not doing great from coronavirus and the slowdowns. And that is probably going to get worse. I know that this was covered while I was off the show, but the economy is basically stopped, or at least it basically stopped December, early January, because of Omicron, which is keeping people out of work. And you guys can still hear it in my voice. Those of you who missed yesterday's show, you can hear that I got it. And I don't know if it was Omicron. I think it might have been Deltacron. But I don't know what it is. But whatever it is, it still is uncomfortable, and it's been a couple weeks. And I never got it that severely. There was no chance I was going to be hospitalized. But there's reason for you to think. I did have to do some work meetings yesterday, and there was one person at the meeting who was not happy that I was talking this way. So, you know, I mean, it does have an effect. Keeps people home, and that slows down business. That slows down commerce. That slows down spending. That makes people insecure. So all of that is still happening, and in the meantime, due to the Biden inflation and other supply chain issues and things that are having other effects on the way the economy is operating, the Fed is feeling pressure to raise interest rates, which will take a lot of money out of the economy. And so we'll see how that goes. The trade deficit, by the way, is $1 trillion for the first time ever. Another one where not Trump's greatest thing, because he had the trade deficit too high. And of course, the Bushes and the Obamas, not a priority to set us on a track where trade deficit would be in good shape. And then now we're at this moment with Biden, where it's just unbelievable. So we are in a very precarious spot. We are way too dependent on the rest of the world. We're not alone in this. The West keeps making this mistake. I was stunned to see this headline yesterday about how Europe is so dependent on Russian gas that they have to scramble for all these alternatives because of Russia's ongoing dispute with Ukraine and whether or not there'll be some interruptions, particularly if Europe wants to help Ukraine. So if Europe helps Ukraine and then Russia says, well, you're not going to get your gas, doesn't that put you in a bad spot? Doesn't that put America in a bad spot with our biggest geopolitical foes in China? This is a friendly reminder because a lot of people are kind of ripping Europe ahead. Look at those guys, too dependent on Russia for gas. Now they can't really stand up against Russia. Well, we're in the same spot with China in so many ways, not to mention other countries as well, but China worst of all. Important to keep an eye on that. So what this means, we'll continue to break it down, but this is going to, I think, provide some pretty big shifts in the economy over the next couple of months that we will share with you, because the Fed is now more focused on inflation than they were on kind of pumping money in as they have been for a while. So, and I think the stock market, for whatever reason, reacted positively to this news. That I don't fully have a grasp on, but it did. One other thought on Ukraine. I'll also invite you to comment on that. Still no fight in Ukraine yet. Still no fight in Ukraine. Do you think it's going to happen? Because our own Francis Martel says not going to happen. Says Ukraine does not expect a Russian invasion. And she cites the words of Zelensky, the Ukrainian premier. So he doesn't think he's going to get invaded. So and it does. It is one of these news cycles where the American media would much rather talk about that than the Biden inflation and the death rate for coronavirus, which, by the way, Omicron has now exceeded Delta's peak in terms of deaths in certain parts of the world. I don't think it's hit in the United States, but in Europe in particular, Omicron has now beaten Delta if you're competing for most deaths. And Omicron is still, we don't have all the data in the United States. Again, we're going to get worse economic data, and then we'll get perhaps a higher death toll, which always lags behind the cases. So all of that is happening, and needless to say, people don't want to talk about it in the media because they all said we need to get Biden in there so we can shut down the virus, which he has not done. Also on yesterday's broadcast, I broke down why Biden gets an F- on coronavirus. I think I have a pretty compelling explanation. And someone needs to haul out Javier Becerra, who is supposed to be in charge of procuring treatments for coronavirus, HHS secretary, who had no background in healthcare, and ask him why he hasn't done it. Because there's no real treatments, at least on a robust level, that could keep people alive. I mean, there are treatments, they're just not being distributed. It's hard to get them. So Tucker Carlson had a good point yesterday. He said the Biden administration is not sending troops to our border, but they do want to send them to the Ukraine border. How good is that? It's a pretty good point. So this is the type of stuff why Trump was saying yesterday that he wants to be he's going to be the 45th and 47th president. It's a great troll, and he's right to keep doing it, but he has to be licking his chops at all this stuff. So Michael Savage gave us a good quote yesterday where he said that there's zero national interest in Ukraine. Exactly. Exactly. There's zero national interest in Ukraine. The only interest is the media would rather talk about Ukraine and talk about standing up to Putin. And then when Russia doesn't invade, which is unlikely, not to say they won't. I don't know the issue cold. But Francis Martel says they won't. Our world editor Breitbart, quoting Zelensky. And then Biden can set himself up to say, hey, thanks to Joe the Biden, then we didn't get a invasion. We didn't get another war with Russia. So then Biden can take a victory lap. So that's what they want to talk about. They want to talk about Breyer. They want to talk about Ukraine. That's the priorities. They don't want to talk about Omicron. They don't want to talk about the Biden inflation. Just to keep in mind how the media operates. Always important to do. Do you know that there's a conservative advocacy and benefits organization with more than 2 million members and counting? It's AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has become one of the most important conservative organizations in America. Joining AMAC gives you access to money-saving benefits, cutting-edge news, and a magazine full of insightful takes on today's most important issues. But most importantly, AMAC is working tirelessly to preserve the freedom secured by our Constitution. With a full-time presence on Capitol Hill, AMAC is pushing back against the efforts to defund our police, weaken our borders, and replace your freedom with government controls. So stand with me and over 2 million patriots by joining now at amac.us/Breitbart. That's amac.us/Breitbart. The benefits are great, but the cause is greater. So join today at amac.us/Breitbart. First guest today is Ken Klukowski, a legal contributor for us at Breitbart News and a longtime fan favorite on the Breitbart News Daily Show every day, 6 a.m. live on the SiriusXM app or on SiriusXM 125, the Patriot channel. Ken is so knowledgeable on the Supreme Court, and we called on him to analyze what's going on with the Justice Breyer seat that apparently will be opening up. Let's roll it. So, Ken, let's dig into the Stephen Breyer news. So he announced he's going to retire, or he actually didn't. It got leaked, and that's kind of raises the suspicion that he's being pushed out. And let's start there before we get into kind of his legacy and where we go from here.
That's exactly the first point. He has not made an announcement. We haven't heard from the justice. This is a grossly... This is an egregious breach of protocol. I mean, this is a serious insult of the justice and of the Supreme Court that, you know, here, assuming that he is retiring, and I'm sure he is, we're hearing enough reporting to be confident of that, that here he was trying through back channels to let the White House know so that they could be planning now weeks or months ahead of time. And they repay his courtesy by leaking to the press something that, by historical standards, it's his right to make that announcement to the public. So it shows right away what this White House is up to. This is a gross insult and an egregious breach of protocol and etiquette between the co-equal branches of the federal government.
So it is suspected that the institutional left and even the White House are trying to push him out. I don't have direct evidence of this, Ken. If you do, feel free to share it. But it certainly looks like the White House is desperate for any sort of a good news cycle. They have no legislative agenda at the moment. The economy's in shambles. And they're desperately trying to pull a rabbit out of their hat. I think... Biden is trying to set himself up to declare victory if Russia doesn't invade Ukraine, which is kind of unbelievable. I mean, there's all these things that are suggesting that they're really trying to pull some strings to save 2022. And this just fits that pattern so perfectly, or maybe it's just a wild coincidence.
It does fit that pattern. I mean, I think that Justice Breyer, like most justices, is a strong an independent-minded man, but sure, the far left was definitely trying to bully him out. Whether he made this decision entirely on his own or whether he felt the pressure, we don't know. I do think, you know, he has quite a political resume. He used to work in the Senate. He was a legislative director, I believe, for Ted Kennedy, and he was chief counsel, I believe, at the Judiciary Committee. So, I mean, this is someone who has a lot of, you know, who has some good political chops. I think this is a vote of no confidence from Stephen Breyer on Senate Democrats that he thinks the Democrats are going to lose the Senate this November, despite the fact that 2/3 of the seats up this cycle are Republican held seats, that he thinks Democrats are doing such a bad job that they're going to lose the Senate as well as the House. And so he figures that even if he didn't want to retire at this time, that if he didn't do so, I think it is a vote of no confidence that Joe Biden could successfully get any sort of nominee through a Republican-controlled Senate, and so he feels compelled to leave now. To your second point, though, yes, I definitely think so. We don't know on the first one, but that would be my guess. The second one, I think we could be confident in saying, yeah, that is why the White House insulted the justice and the court by leaking this news. They're trying to change the narrative, and they have succeeded in that because it's what you and I are talking about this morning. But yeah, everything that Joe Biden is touching is turning sour. No agenda that's moving. The few things that are moving are going through executive action. They are unpopular with the public. They're being struck down in the courts. He's facing growing disasters on foreign policy, and he really wanted to change the conversation. Which is, yeah, I believe why they're pushing this, trying to mobilize their base.
Yeah, and no one will really stand up and say that this is inappropriate. They might a little bit, and then they'll move on and start focusing on what happens next. But before we do that, Ken, before we look at what could happen next, I want to talk about Justice Breyer's reputation on the bench. It was clearly on the left, but not maybe as hard left as some people would like to think of him as. And I did have a couple of opinions that I think that did at least represent some sort of allegiance to the Constitution, or maybe I'm overselling it. What do you think?
No, I think you're exactly right. He is a liberal justice, but he is the most moderate of the three liberal justices on the court. And when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was still on the court, he was the most moderate of the four. I can think of maybe four decisions off the top of my head where he broke with the left and went with the right. One is Bush v. Gore in 2000.
Of course. I mean, that's probably the most famous.
Where he voted to say that George W. Bush was right. What Al Gore wanted to do in the Florida recount was unconstitutional. Now, he just thought he thought that the whole state should have a hand recount, which would take months. The Speaker of the House would have been the acting president for weeks or months if Breyer had his way. And, you know, his colleagues were saying, no, we're not going there. But still, he broke with the left and said, and the left, you know, refuses to mention it these days. He said, yeah, what you were doing violated the Constitution. That's one. In 2005, he was the fifth vote to save a Ten Commandments display in Texas. Sandra Day O'Connor, who was a Republican-appointed moderate, she voted to strike it down. He was the fifth vote to save it in the case of Van Orden v. Perry. In 2012, in the big Obamacare case, he voted with conservatives to strike down the mandatory expansion of Medicaid to all 50 states. He said that coerced the states, therefore it violated state sovereignty. It was unconstitutional under the 10th Amendment. There were a couple of religious liberty cases. One of them was one of my cases at the Supreme Court. It was the constitutionality of a World War of a veterans memorial started with World War I in Bladensburg, Maryland, where he voted to say that crosses and other religious images. He joined with the conservatives to say that things like we think of in Arlington National Cemetery, that those longstanding benign recognitions of faith, even if on public land or publicly constructed, are not unconstitutional and are consistent with the Constitution. And he also voted to say that it was unconstitutional to deny a Christian school access to a playground safety fund program because of the religious character of the school. So, I mean, those are just a few off the top of my head where he has broken with liberal orthodoxy and shown a moderate and independent streak.
Could this at all be helpful to Republicans and anyone who wants a more moderate appointment from Biden and not a hard leftist? Because they've tried this tactic in the past when Trump had appointments that, you know, that someone like Amy Coney Barrett needs to live up to the Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And, you know, you get this concept that the seat is owned by the person who previously held it.
Well, I mean, obviously, everyone's going to make the points that they are trying to make. I think this is more a test of the Biden presidency. Is he going to go for more of a consensus building pick like Justice Breyer, or is he going to swing for the fences and try and actually move the court to the left to put someone on the court who, for cases where Breyer would side with the conservative wing of the court, is he going to go with someone who's going to reliably vote only in the way that the legal left and the political left would like? So I think that this is, because remember, because we're talking here, it's all a matter of keeping your campaign promises. Like you talk about Amy Coney Barrett, Donald Trump promised that he would appoint justices in the mold of Antonin Scalia, an outspoken, unapologetic judicial conservative, a textualist and an originalist. Donald Trump ran on that. He even put out a list of the people he would be choosing from. So the former president was just keeping his promise. Joe Biden, by contrast, promised to be a unifier. He didn't promise to appoint people in the mold of far left justices. He refused to release a list of justices at all. He refused to follow Trump's example. And he just said that, you know, the most important thing for him, the two most important things in the world to him, were beating COVID and unifying the country. And right. This is just, he has already been an epic failure on beating COVID. And I'm betting now he will continue to be an epic failure on unifying the country when it comes to his Supreme Court pick. So it'll be one, the former president kept a promise. I think with Biden, this will be yet another instance of breaking that promise and doing so egregiously.
Is it even legal for Joe Biden to say that only a woman, a black woman, can get a certain job? It sounds like illegal discrimination to me. And that's kind of insane because it's for literally the highest court in the land is what the job would be for. And assuming he's going to do it anyway, who are the names that are the potential people who could get picked?
Well, Alex, you're absolutely right that in any other context, it would be grossly unconstitutional. The Constitution mandates color blindness in society. That's going to be before the Supreme Court later this year. The Students for Fair Admissions, two cases, one challenging racial preferences at the University of North Carolina, the other challenging racial preferences at Harvard University. For public universities or any part of government, the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, which is also applies to the federal government through the Fifth Amendment, is that it's illegal to discriminate on the basis of race. I mean, that was central to the Civil War that we fought in this country. There are certain matters where things may not be legal, but there's no remedy in the courts. Certainly, the president doing it, I mean, he knows what the Constitution says, or at least, you know, one would hope that he does. In any other area, like in university admissions, this would be illegal. Government aid programs, this would be illegal. Hiring someone for a job in the federal government. And guess what? This is a job in the federal government. It is illegal. But it's no surprise that a president who has built a whole administration on identity politics is really, I think, demeaning the eventual nominee by saying, okay, this is the person I'm picking. It's not her intellect. It's not her accomplishments. It's sure. not her life story. I'm choosing her because of her skin color and her gender. That's hardly the kind of compliment that I think any distinguished legal mind hopes to hear.
Unfortunately, we got to leave it there. So we have to have you back for round two to figure out who are the potential picks. But I think that was a very, very well stated. We have a great new sponsor of the show, PaintYourLife.com. PaintYourLife is such a cool company. It is professional, hand-painted portraits created from any photo at an affordable price, and they move really fast. It only takes about 5 minutes to get started and 2 weeks to get your photo. You can combine photos of people or places, people you love, all into one painting. If you take a vacation, you want to celebrate some of your favorite times you've had, some of your favorite memories, paintyourlife.com is exactly where to go for this. It's a perfect gift idea. I know I'm always looking for a way to be creative with my gift giving, surprise people for birthdays, anniversaries, weddings. This is the place to go. It is the sort of thing that can really blow people's minds, because if you can take any picture, be it your children, family, a special place, a cherished pet. I think that's what I'm doing next. An action shot of you, anyone in your life that you want to celebrate and memorialize and remember, whatever it is, you can do it with paintyourlife.com. It's meaningful stuff, and it's personal portraits that are for you, and you can cherish it forever. At paintyourlife.com also, there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money's refunded, guaranteed. And right now, there's a limited time offer. Get 20% off your first painting. That's right. Only you will get 20% off your first painting, and they have free shipping. So to get this special offer, text the word Breitbart to 64,000. So that's Breitbart. Text it to 64,000. Text Breitbart to 64,000 for Paint Your Life for the 20% off and the free shipping. Paint Your Life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Terms apply. Available at paintyourlife.com/terms. Again, text Breitbart to 64,000. A second guest today, Alan Bakari, is our top reporter on tech and really one of the most important reporters on high tech in Silicon Valley in the world. And we discuss this new partnership with NewsGuard, the far left fact checkers, really not far left as much as the arch establishment fact checkers, which involves the far left because the media establishment includes the far left, but also some Republican establishment types too are involved, and a not a good group that we've talked about numerous times on the show. And they're now teaming with the teachers unions to indoctrinate your kids, and not a good thing. We get into all of that, plus more censorship efforts from YouTube and Spotify and others that we are keeping an eye on very closely at Breitbart News and Twitter. All that to come in this interview. Alan tracks one of the stories that I'm most personally interested in at Breitbart News, which is the case of NewsGuard. I wrote extensively about NewsGuard in my book, Breaking the News. It is this group of self-appointed journalists, most of them on the left, with a few establishment Republicans in the group, but no one anti-establishment, that has self-appointed themselves as the policemen of journalistic integrity. And it's all a front to empower the establishment and to try to minimize and diminish the reach and influence of anti-establishment media outlets. They harass us on a relatively constant basis, and they're very much on the nose when it comes to the way they do it and the tactics they use. They're constantly peppering me with annoying emails that have no real purpose other than to try to waste my time. And I've made the mistake of wasting time with them for a long period of time. But they don't really have a business model. They've been propped up by places like Microsoft in order to get their start. And now they have figured out another way to get a bunch of money. And this is to team up with the teachers unions. And the teachers unions will now be using NewsGuard to try to teach young people how to spot disinformation. And by disinformation, of course, we mean news that comes from places like Breitbart, etc. Alan, give us this story, what we need to know, and whatever essential background and NewsGuard we need.
So one of the country's biggest teachers unions is going to buy NewsGuard licenses for its, I believe, 1.7 million teachers. So this is a very big deal for NewsGuard. And this is really part of a wider trend, I think, of what the teachers union, you know, who are very, obviously very, very bad guys, they've successfully used the movement of parents against, you know, radical indoctrination in schools, which is a good thing. But these unions have used it as an opportunity to try and take more power for themselves. They're rolling out these misinformation classes, and they're going to use NewsGuard as a part of that. I think the end game here for the teachers unions is to have, you know, kids going back to their parents, you know, and asking them, you know, why are you reading Breitbart? Why are you reading misinformation? I think that's the goal here, because they recognize that the tides are turning against them and they want to do something about it, whether that's teaching kids that, you know, that Breitbart News is misinformation, or whether that's, you know, convincing the Attorney General to label parents terrorists.
So this is something that obviously is a pretty clever way of them to get money and attention and try to create partnerships that will broaden their reach, especially with younger people. It's a, I do tip my cap to them in that regard, which is because they have such a terrible product, but a deal like this could sustain them for a while.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. I mean, it wouldn't function in like a regular free market. They have to rely on these deals, whether it's with Microsoft or with the teachers unions. It's actually a very similar model to, you know, companies that rely on government contracts. You know what these companies do is they try and get a lot of good press from the establishment media. They try and tie themselves to particular political causes and political movements, and it's all aimed at getting these very lucrative contracts. I think that's similar to what NewsGuard is doing here.
Yeah. So, Alan, is there any way to slow this down or stop it or raise awareness about it? Is there anyone who's pointing out that this is kind of unbelievable, or is it just, are we just kind of alone here?
Well, yeah, obviously we are. The conservative movement, I think we've done a good job of explaining to them what NewsGuard is, how they're an establishment outfit. Funnily enough, Bill Kristol agreed with us on that right when NewsGuard was launching. He said that this is establishment people picking establishment sources that they like. But I'm not sure there is a way to stop it. I think this fits in very much with what the teachers' unions want. They want a source of seeming authority that they can use to label all the sources they don't like as bad and unreliable and misinformation. And that is what NewsGuard offers.
So is there anything they're doing that's redeeming at all? Because I have just been the people in the established media fact-checking class, Alan, that I look into, they seem to have the least redeeming characteristics to me.
Yeah, I think they're actually even worse than the regular fact-checkers because, you know, the regular fact-checkers, they go after, like, particular details in stories. Whereas NewsGuard labels entire news outlets as, you know, either good or bad. There's literally two categories. They either give you a green tick or they give you a red tick, and that'll appear next to your your news website's name on search results. You either have a green tick there or a red tick. And what that the result of this is, the result of that system and the result of them obviously being very biased towards the establishment, is that you have news outlets like Rolling Stone, which are notorious for publishing hoaxes. You'll have, their hoax stories in search results with a green tick next to it saying, yes, this story is fine, this news outlet is fine. And you'll have fact checks from conservative outlets pointing out that, that the stories of Rolling Stone are nonsense, whether that's, you know, the UVA story, or more recently, their story claiming that Oklahoma hospitals were overflowing due to ivermectin. That was eventually debunked by the hospitals themselves. Conservative media's fact checks will have a red text tick next to them.
Right.
And, you know, many other examples you could use.
Sure. And I mean, and there's been, among the many mistakes NewsGuard's made, and if you guys go to Breitbart.com, look at Alan's reporting, and if you pick up my book Breaking the News, you'll see example after example. But you know, they were big Russia hoaxers. They were all in on the Russia hoax, and they were in on the Biden laptop being Russian disinformation. And there's no consequences for that, and there's no one who's going to cut them off. In fact, you get rewarded if you make the mistakes that benefit the institutional left and the establishment.
Yes, and these are not small effects. Whether it's claiming small mistakes, whether it's, you know, claiming Putin was blackmailing Donald Trump, or, you know, more recently claiming there was some sort of dispute on the Supreme Court about masks, eventually debunked by the Supreme Court itself. These are big, big mistakes, and yet the outlets that make the mistakes continue to receive the stamp of approval from NewsGuard.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. So what is the plan with these teachers? So these teachers are going to be getting the news ratings. I assume they're going to get them unquestioningly. And what's going to be in them? It's going to be that, you know, BuzzFeed is good, even though they published the PP dossier, and Breitbart is bad, even though we debunked it. Is that what it's going to be?
In a nutshell, yes. That is what teachers are going to be teaching their kids. I think it's what many teachers who are extremely left-wing, as we've discovered over the, well, as we've known for a long time, It's what they want to do. They want to indoctrinate kids. They don't want to teach them how to find the truth. They want to teach them what the truth is in their view. And NewsGuard is just another one of those projects that that reinforces the worldview that says, you know, one half of the country is bad and wrong about everything, and the other half is always right and correct, and you should listen to them.
Who are their top partners right now? Who are the people who are keeping them afloat?
Up until this deal, it was actually hard to say that, I think. You know, they've sort of been in limbo ever since the initial Microsoft partnership. And that partnership was only ever sort of an optional thing. You know, it was installed, the NewsGuard extension, which is a browser extension, was installed as sort of default on Microsoft Edge browsers. But first of all, almost no one uses Microsoft Edge browsers. And second of all, you still had to go in and turn it on, even though it was already installed. So even that was not a particularly big thing for them. This is a big thing. This, you know, really takes them out to millions of people, and you know, makes them even more of a force to be reckoned with, which is obviously not a good thing. It's going to, you know, reinforce this sort of false divide between establishment media and independent media.
Alan Bakari again is with us. He's our top tech reporter. He's also got a great book called Hashtag Deleted. Let's move on and talk a little bit about Twitter. Twitter censored about 5 million tweets in the first 6 months of 2021. And it seems like it was only going up from there with the new CEO Gulag Parag Agrawal, who's even a bigger censor than Jack Dorsey. Give us the lay of the land here on Twitter these days.
Yes, I'm liking this new nickname for the Twitter CEO, Gulag Parag. We didn't have as good of a nickname for Jack Dorsey. Twitter has come out with its transparency report. This is similar to what a lot of other tech companies do, in which they boast about how much content they've taken down, how many users they've censored. YouTube does this as well. Every quarter they come out with their statistics, you know, talking about the billions and billions of hours of content they've removed. So Twitter is coming out and saying, yes, we did force users to take down 4.7 million tweets in the first 6 months of 2021. And at the same time, interestingly, in this report, they're also revealing statistics on how often they've been asked by governments and courts to remove content. And on the one hand, they're saying, oh, you know, the government authoritarianism, governments telling us to remove content, this is a threat to the open internet. But when we do it, when we, you know, unaccountable corporation, take down millions and millions of tweets, that's not a threat to the open internet. That's just something we're going to casually admit in our transparency report. It shows you how far we've come since the early days of the internet, where, you know, back in 2006, YouTube taking down one video was enough to, you know, spark protests and complaints that, you know, the age of internet censorship was coming. Now Twitter can take down millions and millions of tweets, and, you know, the media will praise them for it.
And this seems to be where most of the key cultural institutions are heading, Alan, not just in big tech, but big tech is the worst, which is the question is not whether or not we should censor, it's whether or not we should censor at a more robust level than what we would have ever thought possible. So how is it working out, though, for these businesses? How is Twitter doing in this new censorship era?
Well, Twitter's still holding steady, but we do see more and more competitors to these companies crop up. I regularly look at the Alexa rankings for Gab, and they, you know, they're consistently rising. It seems to be Gab.com. It's a competitor to Twitter. Seems to be about to break into the Alexa top 1,000. Still, up, that's a long way off from Twitter. But, you know, the competitors are out there. They are growing. Rumble, another one, doing very well, competitor to YouTube. Of course, you know, the problem with all these competitors is that they appeal primarily to conservatives. It's always been the case. Most people who are not conservatives at the moment, anyway, don't have a huge reason to leave these platforms. But as censorship grows more common and starts to affect more people, it's going to start to affect people who are who are not just conservatives. And that's when these platforms could start to be in real trouble.
I think that is an interesting thing, but then you see how committed they are to the censorship. I mean, YouTube, I guess, is blacklisted Dan Bongino. I mean, it's a, he's a popular, I guess, a podcaster, does video podcasts. I know he's on Rumble too, so I'm sure that he's okay with it overall, but it's the, I do feel like they're seeing they can run the tables on us on the right, because all of these platforms are so addictive and they're all controlled by the same group of people that they think that they can just censor all of us and we're all just going to go along with it.
Yeah, and the reason why this is such a problem is because, you know, as you pointed out, they are addictive platforms and they were really the first movers. They had the first mover advantage. So they have all of the people on these platforms who are not politically aligned, who are, you know, in, you know, maybe independent or moderate or liberal. And when they kick conservatives off the platform, they're cutting them off from that potential audience. They're making sure that conservative influencers can't influence people who are perhaps open to persuasion and being having their minds changed on certain issues. They force them off into these alternative platforms where the audience is primarily conservatives, and you know where the audience might be big, but they're still just, you know, preaching to the choir. They're not influencing people who are on the fence, who are open to persuasion. And I think that's the goal here. That's always been the goal. They saw what happened in 2016 when we had a genuinely free and open internet, more or less, and when messages could break through, break out of like echo chambers and reach people who are people and voters who are undecided. You know, that was a genuine threat to the establishment media and its longstanding control over the flow of information. When news outlets could compete on an equal playing field on platforms like Facebook and YouTube, the establishment media was really getting crushed. That's why they spent all this time, nearly half a decade now, trying to put that genie back in the bottle, trying to end the kind of internet freedom we had four or 5 years ago.
Yeah, and this is where you're seeing the, I don't know where it is things are going to give here, because it just seems like the censorship continues and the pushback is so slow and the ramping up of alternative platforms is so slow. And it is, the censors are so emboldened right now. And just like we've always warned at Breitbart, Alan, they are continuing to chip away around the edges in order to see how much they can get away with. The latest example is Neil Young is called for Joe Rogan's podcast to be removed from Spotify, saying that if it's not removed, then you need to remove my music. And Spotify is going to do that. So they're going to remove Neil Young's music because they bet big on Joe Rogan. But what if Neil Young becomes 100 top artists? You know, what if it becomes, the Rolling Stones, and it becomes, you know, the whoever the are on the pop charts right now, and they all say, well, we don't want to be with Joe Rogan because Joe Rogan is an anti-establishment person, even though he's not a right winger by any means. But it's Howard Stern's in there pushing hard against Joe Rogan. It seems like if the left sets their mind to it, they're going to be able to censor him. They're going to be able to put enough pressure to get Rogan kicked off of Spotify, even though Spotify bet so big on him. And then what happens then, Alan?
Well, this is in one sense a positive thing, because it shows how terrified they are of Joe Rogan. And, you know, we see this with Tucker Carlson as well, and the, you know, repeated attempts to get advertisers to boycott him. It's because they're so popular, you know. Joe Rogan has an audience that is, I think, like 3 or 4 times as big as the biggest cable news host, which is, by the way, Tucker Carlson. So, it's because Joe Rogan has such an impact and poses such a threat to their narratives, because so many people listen to him, that they're panicking and trying to get him censored. They could do it. They could get him kicked off Spotify. But, you know, the good thing about people who have podcasts, as opposed to people who are, you know, just on Twitter or something, is that people who have podcasts tend to have dedicated audiences who will follow them to a new platform. They already follow Joe Rogan to Spotify from the various other platforms. Most of his audience will probably follow him to a new platform. I don't think even if they succeed, they're going to be able to get rid of Joe Rogan's influence or even damage it significantly in any way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think things will pop up, but it is just a matter of how big of a movement, how big of the censorship movement gets, because it's certainly not waning. It's going in the opposite direction. I mean, we spent a lot of the show talking about how Joe Biden is going to will only pick a black woman for the Supreme Court, which is, I mean, Alan, I mean, it is, I can't even believe it's a legal thing. And I know you neither of us are attorneys, but it's just an amazing concept that a country that has gone so far out of its way to not be racist to, you know, have this open level of racism at this point. And as I've been saying also throughout the show, Hollywood's been doing this for years now, where they won't hire, straight white males because of diversity quotas. And it is a trend that is ramping up. It's not slowing down.
Yeah, and you know, both of these trends, both the censorship we're talking about and this anti-white racism that is now just embraced, not just by Joe Biden and the Democrat Party, but every leading corporation, every major entertainment studio, every university, just completely across society. I think it only ends when Republicans get serious. And, you know, I do wonder why, you know, the Republican leadership, you know, obviously you've got red states like Texas, that are passing laws against tech censorship, that are passing laws against critical race theory. Florida's done that as well, West Virginia, various other states. But, you know, I'm waiting to see, you know, the Republican leadership to come out with bills against both of these things, which I think are, you know, top issues for Republicans, the censorship on the one hand and the racism on the other. And I think the two are certainly connected, because the censorship prevents us from talking about that that second problem. It is remarkable, as you said. I think, you know, America has this reputation for being the most anti-racist country in the world, but that this is now like morphed into this very sort of ugly thing, where it actually has once again become okay to start talking about hiring and firing people and appointing people purely based on, you know, the color of their skin and what's between their legs. It's something I think, you know, most ordinary Americans find very jarring and, you know, just very, very, very bad. But it's this mentality has captured the elites of this country.
This is the point. This is the point. You've got it. You've hit the point, which is it's the elites. And the people who are controlling the narrative and who are controlling the corporations and are controlling the conversation, they're mostly unified on this topic. And anyone who is not unified with them, they pressure them to get thrown off the platforms. And it's not that most of the country isn't with us. I can guarantee you they are. I can guarantee you most of the country, including the BIPOCs, don't want to just be seen as their skin color or their genitals. I mean, the obviously, it is all about a political agenda, but the people with the same agenda are controlling all of these industries, and they're all very adamant about getting that agenda through, and it will become a war of attrition, and I don't have a lot of faith that our side will fight that war of attrition hard enough. We just, traditionally, it just hasn't been the case. Alan, I got time for one more topic, and I want to bring up Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook cryptocurrency project shutting down. I forgot he had one. Why is it shutting down? And, I mean, it seems like crypto is such a gold rush right now. What was it, and why is it shutting down?
Facebook, a few years back, came out with this cryptocurrency project called Libra that was, you know, going to be the official cryptocurrency of Facebook, or Meta, as it's now called. Why would they shut it down now? Well, I mean, it hasn't been very successful. It was widely mocked by the cryptocurrency world, by people in it. It was seen as a very centralized cryptocurrency, which is sort of anathema to the whole idea of cryptocurrency. You know, obviously some cryptocurrencies are more centralized than others. But mostly what cryptocurrencies are and the underlying blockchain technology are, you know, they're decentralized. They're not controlled by any central company like a bank or a social media company like Facebook. I think it just never took off. That's why they're getting rid of it now. It's not because the cryptocurrency industry isn't going anywhere. It's in a bit of a downturn at the moment. But, you know, there are going to be a lot of applications of cryptocurrency, including in VR, which is where Facebook is pivoting to. There are going to be a lot of applications there. So, you know, maybe they'll come up with something new, but certainly Libra was a pretty big failure for the company, I would say.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, you don't see them kind of pull out completely this precipitously unless they really think it's going bad. So interesting stuff. And again, though, the Facebook's product is incredibly addictive, and that's why they'll be able to weather a lot of these storms, even though they make a product that is, I think, pretty repulsive in a lot of ways. Alan Bakari, our top tech reporter at Breitbart News, hashtag deleted is his book, which you all should read, and you probably should have read it by now. Thanks, Alan. We'll talk to you later, my friend.
Thanks, Alex.
That's all for today. Thanks to producers Haley and Greg Eben and Robert Marlowe, who helps me pick topics. Thanks to all of you who have told 10,000 friends and family members about the new podcast and about the live show and about Breitbart.com and share our content in the social web. All the above is very helpful. However you can pitch in, it means a lot. So that's all for today, and thanks for listening. Yeah.